joined now by a former Edmonton Oiler. He was the fifth overall pick back in 1987 by the Pittsburgh Penguins. Played for the Penguins, the Oilers, the Lightning, the Canucks, and the Flyers. Also with Phoenix in his NHL career. Chris Joseph joins us. Chris, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. A few things I want to talk about. For you, when you came into the NHL, how important was it as a young guy? How much of a difference does it make having veterans at maybe the position that you excel at? Like, you were more of a puck-moving offensive defenseman. Having those type of guys rather than just veteran defensemen or fourth liners, do you need a guy who's similar to your style to learn more about the game in the NHL?
I'm not sure you need a guy that's your style. Leadership is valuable, obviously, but you can have a leader that plays a different style of game. And for me, when I first came into the league, there were guys like Kevin Lowe, Steve Smith, I'm just talking defensemen, Craig Muni, Charlie Huddy. And I don't know if you would say any of those guys played the same style that I did, but they gave me lots of valuable insights. And, you know, lots of, you know, how I'm, what's expected of me, you know, daily in practice, what's expected of me in preparation-wise, and, you know, how my role sort of complemented their role on the ice. So I'm not so sure you need that exact type of player. I think it can be beneficial, but good quality leadership is utmost important, and, you know, whatever form that comes in is... you'll take what you can get, right?
Did you have the veteran players tell you what was expected of you in practice in the games more than the coaching staff?
Yes. The coaches would tell you what's expected. And then the players would tell you how to sort of get that done. You know, sometimes there was a bit of a communication gap between players and coaches. And if you had a veteran leader there with you, they sort of fill in the gaps, something that maybe you're not comprehending from what the coach is saying, and they will fill in the gaps. And, you know, but mostly the veteran leaders I found led by example. They didn't have to talk. Mark Messier rarely had to talk. Kevin Lowe, for me, rarely had to talk. It was what they did day in and day out that really led the way for me. You know, when I first came in, I was 18 years old. I thought I was a hard worker. You know, I thought I was doing things well and working hard, and I thought I gave it my all. And then I came to the Oilers, and I saw what Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier and Kevin Lowe and Jari Kurri and all those guys did every single day. And I thought to myself, oh, my God, I got to start working a lot harder. So that's the type of leadership I think is what's valuable to a young player, because there is a big jump, obviously, skill-wise, moving up to that level. But in your preparation and your day-to-day activity, there's a huge jump as well.
Chris Joseph joins us. Interesting you say that, Chris, because I do think a lot of people will believe, hey, you know, I'm a hard worker. I'm working hard. But you get to that next level, and it's not just about skill. The best players on the team usually are the hardest workers. How did you suddenly improve your work ethic?
Well, I don't think it suddenly happens.
Okay.
I think you sort of grow into it over time. You also realize, you know, as a young player, you think you can get away with a lot of stuff. You know, like I was the type of player that made a lot of, I took a lot of chances. You know, offensively, I would try to jump in, and I pinched, lost, and I got burnt, but I had the speed to get back at a young age. Now I jump up to the NHL, and I don't have the speed anymore. I mean, I still have the speed, but everybody else is faster.
Yeah.
So you have to learn that type of thing positionally. And then, of course, as you get older and you become the veteran, then you actually start losing your speed. And now you're much wiser, but your body just doesn't do what it used to do. So I think that's something that it takes a while. And over the progression of a career, you know, you learn different roles. But it doesn't happen overnight. But that's the beauty of good leadership. The guys that I mentioned, and there was a lot more guys than just those guys, but the guys I mentioned, you know, they did it every day. And so, you know, I'd come off of practice and I'm bagged. And I mean, this happened in Philadelphia even. So I played with Paul Coffey, the guy that I got traded for here. So I come off the ice in Philly And Koff would look at me and say, let's go jump on the bike. And the last thing in the world I want to do is jump on the bike. But I said, I'll be damned if I'm going to let Paul Coffey ride the bike without me. So that's the type of leadership I think goes a long way. And that's the type of thing that you need from the veteran guys for the younger guys.
Chris Joseph joins us. Chris, do you think that's a concern in Edmonton that, you know, a lot of their young skill guys haven't had any veteran leadership in Edmonton?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, anytime you have a team that's packed with young guys like they are, you have to go out of your way as an organization to bring in those leaders. Now, are those leaders going to be around for, you know, the good days ahead? Probably not. But you have to bring them around. And, you know, a good example I see is Ryan Smith with the Oilers. You know, he is a hardworking guy, and you watch him day in and day out, and he gives it his all. So for me, that's a good example. And these young guys can learn from him. Now, you probably need more than just him. I think Sean Horkoff was a good leader that way as well. But, you know, you need to bring those guys in. And if that means you have to go acquire some character guys, which I think, you know, McTee's tried to do this year, then you have to bring them in. And if that means they're not going to be around for the good times, so be it. But you have to teach the young guys the importance of the preparation and the work ethic and what's expected on a daily basis. In junior, just, you know, a simple example, right? In junior, you know, as kids grow up, they have good games, they have bad games. And sometimes we watch some of these guys, and they'll go lights out for one or two, and then they'll go into the tank for 10. And, you know, you have to get to that level in the NHL where you go lights out for 10, and you're maybe off for one or two. So you got to change it up. And that's all preparation and just the way you prepare for games and, you know, your daily routines and your work ethic.
Chris Joseph, a former NHLer, joined us. We're talking NHL. We're going to get to the Alzheimer's face-off in a second. Chris, you know, you can have the leadership, but ultimately it's still up to the players. You know, Paul Coffey could have asked you, and I guess you said in that situation you can't really say no, although you could, but then you maybe regress as a player. At what point does having the leadership change over to having the internal drive, and how much is it on the young players themselves to become better players regardless of who else is in the room?
Well, you know the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yep.
So, you know, we have talked, you and I, just now about the value of good leadership, but honestly, I believe it comes down to the player more than the leader. So it would take, you know, some of the young guys with the Oilers dressing room, Yakupov, for example. He's got to want it bad enough that he sees those veterans doing it, but eventually he's going to have to want to do it for himself. Like, he's going to have to want to do that extra stuff for himself. And so as much as, you know, if you want to put a percentage on it, I'd have to say it's got to be 95% the individual young player and maybe 5% the leader. They can only do so much, you know, and they show them what's expected. But if the player won't do it, then, you know, it's a moot point, right? It doesn't really matter. And I've seen lots of that as well, too. You know, we've all seen, and you got Strutty, we've all seen players with just loads of talent that don't want to do it, and, you know, their careers fizzle out. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, you see tons of players that, you know, maybe don't have the skill that some of the other ones have, but they work their guts out every day, and they make it happen, and they end up carving out a nice long career for themselves.
Chris Joseph joins. Now, Chris, you were talking the other day, or earlier today, about skating. Last time I saw you skate, man, you could probably still skate like the NHL guys. How did you become such a good skater?
I don't know, Gregor. It's you know, I think I did lots of power skating as a kid.
Okay.
Obviously. And, you know, I think I was one of the lucky ones that I had a natural stride. I was never a real quick skater. I had, you know, long, powerful strides, I guess. But, you know, I did do lots of power skating. I grew up at Burnaby Winter Club, where I played all my minor hockey. And power skating is big there. It always has been. I think it always will be. So I believe that's, you know, important. And I still tell parents today, I said, you know, when you got little ones, and if you have an opportunity, if you only have enough money for one camp in the summer, I say send them to power skating. And, you know, because you look at the, you know, the weakest skater in the NHL, he's still pretty darn good, isn't he? You know? And so, you know, you want to spend the money on that type of thing first. And that's why I think it's so important. And my philosophy is with the little ones too, you know, if let's say little Johnny is a great skater, but he's got terrible hands. Well, if he's the first one to the puck all the time, he's probably going to develop those hands. And so you want him to just get that skating ability first. And so I think power skating is huge. You know, I always admire some of the real good skaters of the game. I think Taylor Hall is a great skater. I always liked watching Scott Niedermeyer skate. Paul Coffey obviously was my idol, and I think a lot of other defensemen. Just so smooth and fluid. You know, and it's all that low, powerful stride. You have to get low, and when you watch kids and they're not bending their knees, then they've got to start. They got to start correcting that, because they're not gonna go very far with it if they don't.
Now, Chris, you played 500 games in NHL. You know, had a long pro career in the NHL and in the American Hockey League, and went over and played in Germany at the end of your career. I know that you've tried. Dave Lumley gives you the gears all the time, because you've been passed over as a minor hockey coach because supposedly you don't have enough experience. How is this possible that an NHL player can't, you know, get approved to be a minor hockey league coach for 8, 9, and 10-year-olds to teach in the fundamentals? Like, to me, this is laughable. How does it happen?
The political machine in minor hockey, isn't it a beautiful thing? I don't know. It's, I was actually flabbergasted when I came home from playing in Italy. I had, my son was going into Adam, and I thought he was at that Adam A level. So I put my name in the coach. Well, I got passed over for somebody that wasn't a very good skater at all. And I was told that I didn't have the credentials. So I went in and got my coach certificate, and I did what I had to do, did my safety course, all that stuff. And came back about 3-4 years later, and I tried to get a Bantam AA team, and there was 5 applicants, and there was 3 teams. And I was asked at that time if I'd be willing to help out one of the other coaches. And I said, so you're telling me out of 5 guys, there's 3 coaching positions, I'm number 4? And they said, yeah, we'd like you to help out. So, of course, I helped, because I wanted to be coaching with my son. And I honestly, I don't have an answer for you. I don't know why it is that way. I don't know what the problem is. You know, my first initial thought is, okay, am I a jerk? Do the parents hate me? Do the kids not like me? And I don't get that sense at all. I think I have a pretty good rapport of the community that I'm in. And so it's flabbergasting. It's, you know, it bothers me that there are people sometimes in positions, and I don't know what their motive is, but they don't want to take the best person available for the job. So yeah, I would say, you know, it's the minor hockey political machine, and it's not just where I am; it's everywhere. You know, my parents talked about it even growing up at Burnaby at the Winter Club too, and it's that way everywhere. So. I don't know why it is. I wish it wasn't, but it is, and you do the best you can. And, of course, you know, I got passed up both those years, and both years those coaches asked me to help out. And, of course, I said yes, because I want to be part of it. And I enjoy being on the ice with the kids. It's a lot of fun. I just don't know why sometimes some of our NHL guys get passed up, or some of the people with good hockey experience, why they get passed up on coaching positions.
Well, like, I could see if we were talking, you know, midget AAA and stuff, maybe, you know, because there's a little bit more into it. But when we're talking novice and Adam, it's just fundamentals. And I don't care. When you've played at the NHL level, you're going to have, A, a higher skill set, number one. And, B, you probably would have recalled something along the way from certain NHL coaches that you could pass on.
Well, you do, absolutely. You know, yeah, I'm still very active coaching minor hockey, you know, in St. Albert where I'm living. And, you know, a lot of the coaches still come up and ask me, you know, what do you think of this and what do you think of that? And, you know, I'm always open to share my experiences. And there are a lot of things that, you know, that you're not going to get from a coaching seminar. You know, you're not going to get from, you know, even you can be a 15-year coach, but if you haven't played at those high levels, you don't understand some of the little things that can give you an advantage. And I don't know what it is, Gregor. I don't know why it is that way, but it is. And, you know, if that's the way it has to be, then I guess that's the way it has to be. I still throw my name in the hat to help out when I can, because I enjoy it. And I think the kids enjoy it too. So I do what I can, and, you know, hopefully someday that changes. I'd like to see I'd like to see players that play professional hockey have a little bit of a bye as far as maybe that Coach One certificate. I think it would be nice to have because I think there's a wealth of knowledge there that some of those guys can share. And, you know, obviously you got to make sure that they're good quality people too, so they have to do the same safety courses and respecting the sport that everybody does. But, you know, after that's all cleared up, then I think there's a lot to be gained from having those guys on the bench and on the ice.
Coming up, the Alzheimer's face-off on April 11th, 12th, and 13th. You mentioned the guy you got traded for. Paul Coffey's coming into town, so you can talk about your biking stories with him and Marty McSorley and a few others. Would you say right now you should be a top five pick again like your NHL based on your speed?
I don't know about that. I think I had some friends in high places that were picking high enough, so I got selected high last year. But, you know what? Wherever I go, I'm going to have a good time. You know, the tournament is an absolute blast, right? We have a great time, and we're raising money for Alzheimer's. So it's win-win for everybody. I've already blocked off the weekend. I look forward to seeing old teammates, sharing some old stories, remembering old stories that I may have forgotten. And then, of course, you're looking forward to meeting the new teammates and creating some new stories. So it's a lot of fun. It's a great weekend. The guys always put on a first-class tournament. And, you know, it's actually, if you look at all the alumni guys around town, it's our event of the year for us. And we all look forward to it. It's such a good time. And to be able to raise the money that we do for Alzheimer's at the same time is just a huge bonus.
If you and Lumley had a race right now, who'd win?
Am I skating backwards?
Yeah.
I think I could take him.
Yeah. Nice. Now, are you on Twitter?
I am.
Do you follow Lumley on Twitter?
No, I haven't. I'm going to follow him today.
You might. I'll say one thing. Lumley's one of the better storytellers. He's pretty funny on Twitter, actually. Especially during Oiler games, he's quite comedic, which Oiler fans need at this juncture. So,
well, I'm going to be looking it up as soon as I'm off the phone with you, and I'll probably start following him.
Well, Chris, I appreciate the time. We'll see you on April 11th, 12th, and 13th. Quickly, give us one sell job for the teams out there, why they should draft you early. What are you going to bring to their team?
I'll bring lots of speed and no hands.
No hands?
My hands are okay, but I'll skate fast and get a whole lot of nothing done. No, we'll have a lot of fun. I'm a guarantee for Saturday night to go out drinking with the guys.
Oh, nice.
And my wife's pretty hot, so I can bring that to dinner on Saturday night, too.
I love it. Chris, I appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Jason.